Hello, welcome and kumusta. Thank you for joining me. This is How, your occupational therapist, and welcome to Occupational Therapy Conversations. What are we going to talk about today? Another big thing in the community of occupational therapists in acute occupational therapy, out of hospital cardiac arrest. And a lot of services are happening because of out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. So cardiac arrest happened. It took place, meaning probably stopped working the heart for a while, or there was a bit of an atrial ventricular fibrillation. Cardiac arrest. Arrest being stop. Cardiac, heart, stop. So this, the regular beating stopped for a while. And it's out of hospital. And it can happen in every areas. Anything outside the hospital could be out of hospital cardiac arrest, obviously. But the attention is being focused on the out of hospital event scenario. But at the end of the day, the heart stopped working. And what's going to happen when this happens? The tendency is, obviously, there's likely going to be some damage in the heart, but a one part of the body that will be mainly affected by this is the brain. And when the brain does not receive oxygen, it is called hypoxia or cerebral hypoxia. Hypo is less, oxia is oxygen. Hypoxia is a condition where there is an insufficient amount of oxygen reaching tissues of the body. And this can occur in a person who is actually breathing normally, either because there's not enough oxygen in the blood or because the blood is not getting to the tissues. So there are multiple hypoxia, guys. You have hypoxia, which is low oxygen in the blood. And how does this happen? High altitude, for example, or when somebody has lung disease, or there is low oxygen in the air. So the blood in itself is having less of the oxygen. Do you have hypoxic hypoxia? Wow, that's nice to hear, isn't it? Right. The other type of hypoxia would be an anemic hypoxia. There is not enough oxygen. But then there is enough oxygen that flows through the body, should flow through the body from external, from the air. There's enough oxygen in there. But the problem is there is not enough hemoglobin. And this is a blood problem. So it's anemic hypoxia. The reason why the tissues are not getting enough oxygen is because the blood, the red blood cells that's supposed to be carrying and transporting these oxygens are not there. So it's a blood situation. You have a circulatory hypoxia, which is also understood as the stagnant hypoxia. Here, the oxygen is available, but poor circulation prevents delivery, like heart failure or shock. That's circulatory hypoxia. When the heart is weak, you would have that. You can also have histotoxic hypoxia. Histo is the Latin for tissue. Toxic would be for poison hypoxia. So here the oxygen is delivered, but the tissues cannot use it. Like, for example, cyanide poisoning and common situations like cyanide poisoning. What would be the common causes of these hypoxia? If you have lung condition, yes, because there is not going to be enough transfer of oxygen, chronic lung condition, COPD, pneumonia, heart failure, high altitude, air obstruction, and then you would have some blood disorders as well. So these are some of the condition. And what would be the symptoms when somebody is having hypoxia? somebody is gasping for air, so somebody would have shortness of breath because the respiratory rate would want to increase. You want to get more oxygen, so there's shortness of breath. And you get confusion. Clear-mindedness will be impaired. So oxygen is very important for alertness. You will have confusion. Rapid heartbeat is another thing because it's the heart is compromised and it wanted to do what the body needs. And if the body is lacking oxygen, the heart will try to do as much as it can because it's thinking you need more blood to transport this oxygen. So rapid heartbeat. You will have cyanosis, where there will be bluish color. Cyano is Latin for blue. Bluish color of the lips or the fingertips. And fatigue. This would be tiredness because energy is very much linked to oxygen consumption. How do you diagnose? How does one diagnose? I don't say you being occupational therapist, or how does one know when there is hypoxia? One, pulse oximetry. That's one. It measures the oxygen saturation. So there are finger oximetry. So you have that. You have the arterial blood gas analysis. That's much more effective doing that because you're really measuring how much oxygen is in blood. That's why in critical care, this is a standard. There is a routine ABG, like testing of blood. And then there is a clinical assessment and imaging for the cause of hypoxia. Very simple, very straightforward. What would be the intervention? This is a medical situation. This is a medical intervention. It is an acute problem and therefore needed to be dealt with immediately. So the first line would be you need to provide oxygen, supplement the person with oxygen. Not an OT's responsibility. It should be a medical responsibility, which happens in the emergency department. It happens among ambulances. Identify what's causing the hypoxia, and then you need to treat the underlying cause. Like, for example, is there an infection particularly affecting the lungs? Then yes, you sort that out. You address the one that is causing the problem. So antibiotics for infection. If there is a ventilatory problem, if there's a breathing problem, then yes, there are multiple options of supplying the person with oxygen. First with the nasal cannula, then high pressure oxygen coming in, and then the non-invasive ventilation, and then the invasive ventilation where you're really supplying the person and then you would have a ventilator on that one. Okay. And then you can have supporting care, which is like positioning, for example. You want to optimize the position of the body and you want to manage the fluid as well. But you don't have to worry about this. All I'm saying is I'm saying these things to you so you know about it. Do you remember when somebody, the positioning of the, what's that? The recovery position? Yeah. It is in such a way where you are technically keeping the spine straight, keeping the back straight, and you are facilitating an open airway. You're making sure that there would be no blockage on the airway, and you are letting the lungs be in an optimum position. Hypoxias are different types of hypoxia. Cerebral hypoxia is where the brain does not receive enough oxygen. And when the brain did not receive oxygen, then it will lead first to an impaired brain function. And if it is prolonged to permanent damage or death, the brain is very sensitive. Just remember, it's very sensitive to its need of air and oxygen. And within minutes of not having oxygen, it'll start to die. Even short periods of reduced oxygen can actually affect somebody's memory, it can affect somebody's movement and even levels of consciousness.
Yeah.
It's one part of the body that does not replenish itself.
Yeah.
There's this thing about neuroplasticity, but it'll take a long time. And by the time it recovers, it will not be as tip-top. So nobody heals quickly. Those parts of the brain that have died, they've died. It's just the other parts of the brain sprouting over. That's neuroplasticity. Let's talk about types of cerebral hypoxia. The blood did not reach the brain, or the air. There may be blood, but there is no oxygen. So you have cerebral hypoxia. Cerebral hypoxia happens when there is mild to moderate reduction of oxygen, and it will cause somebody to be confused, or it will cause somebody to have memory problems. You can have focal cerebral ischemia. There is reduced oxygen to a specific part of the brain, and it's focal because a blood supply was interrupted, and this is very particular in stroke. The other one would be a global cerebral ischemia. So there is a complete stoppage of oxygen supply. And this global stoppage is very typical in cardiac arrests. Because the heart all of a sudden generally stops beating and blood doesn't reach the brain. So that's a global problem. And then you can have a complete anoxia. A is without oxygen. It's very straightforward. Cerebral anoxia, there is complete absence of oxygen in the brain. How you would you have this? If you're diving, all of a sudden your oxygen just didn't get delivered. There you go. You would have this. High altitude, you would have this. What are the causes of the cerebral hypoxia? Cardiac arrest, which is the most common one, particularly the global type. Stroke. When somebody drowns or they choke, they didn't breathe. Again, when you stop breathing, there's no air in the lungs, and then the heart should be pumping blood around the body, particularly on the brain. There you go. You would have this. Somebody has severe asthma or COPD or exacerbation of COPD. That's why those people who has respiratory problems have clouding of consciousness. Drug overdose can do this. Why? Because it arrests the breathing. And you will have that effect. Carbon monoxide poisoning. Why? Because instead of oxygen being taken in by the body, it'd be carbon monoxide. And then you would have traumatic brain injury. Obviously, these are mechanical problems. Or strangulation. What would be the symptoms of cerebral edema? Or cerebral edema, cerebral hypoxia. It depends, depending on the severity of the duration. From simple confusion problem, simple memory loss, difficulty concentrating, loss of consciousness, seizures, poor coordination, movement problems. You can have pupillary changes. These would be the symptoms. You would see this in the eyes. Comatose. How would you know somebody's had a cerebral event or cerebral hypoxia? Do a pure neurological examination, which meant understanding the history. MRI, CT scan, if you want to be specific on which part of the brain is not or has not received oxygen, particularly in strokes. And if you want to check for the brain activity, EEG. Electroencephalogram, that's to see if there are any activities in the brain. If the brain did not receive any oxygen, it'll stop working. Blood gases is another way. So if you would assume that when the blood gas is low, the brain is at risk. Immediate treatment for resuscitation, CPR, defibrillation, oxygen therapy, or mechanical ventilation. Control blood pressure and blood flow to the brain. Protective strategies like cooling therapy, Why does cooling therapy work? Because it slows down the metabolism of the body. And when the body is slowed in terms of metabolism, it's demanding less oxygen. And so it will not consume much energy and it will try to preserve itself.
Yeah.
These are some of the neuroprotective strategies, particularly with cardiac arrest, you know. And after emergency activities have been done, then rehabilitation is required, particularly for those who has cognitive or motor deficits. Rehabilitation, meaning you have to get the person back to the level where they were. And there are multiple techniques in rehabilitation. You either do a restorative rehab, which is remediation type of rehabilitation, particularly with the motor problems, or if the problems persist and you can't do anything about it, then you need to do compensatory strategies, which by essence and by nature, it is the rehabilitation. When you compensate and you still get the person doing the things that they do, regardless and despite of, that is rehabilitation, rehabilitation approach, rehabilitation frame of reference, very typical of occupational therapy. What we're missing nowadays are the restorative interventions. Are there any behavioral measures? Say you're working with somebody who's had cerebral hypoxia out of hospital cardiac arrest. What are the symptoms? So you start waking the person up if they're in critical care. And if they're awake, are they alert? Can they concentrate? Is there a cognitive impairment? You start with that. In critical care, the first priority, obviously, would be for medics to get the person settled in terms of their internal dynamics and internal homeostasis. They could be in bed, so you can't push it until everything is settled. While the heart is being supported, they might be generally weak. They might be on some form of ionotropes. Then what can they do while they are in bed? As an occupational therapist, you need to assess. ADLs would be dependent, so you can't do much with the ADLs. You can establish their baseline functioning if they are talking. And if they're not talking, it just meant that their functional communication is impaired. They're confused, an element of expressive difficulty. And what's the problem with their expressive difficulty? Maybe, and it's more likely because of a cognitive impairment. Cognitive impairment in terms of their level of attention, concentration, in terms of level of understanding the purpose of things. So they might be demonstrating a symptom called ideomotor or ideational apraxia. And so that's where it starts. The therapy begins on the first and foremost on identifying the problems that you can work with. And you will be focusing on performance components in critical care. What are the performance components? Would be physical, again, shared with physiotherapist. Cognitive, shared with psychologists. But since they're not there, we can do some restorative interventions. You can start stimulating the person, giving them some purposeful therapeutic activities that will enable them to process, that will enable them to challenge their concentration, attention, selection, sorting, matching, concept formation, reasoning, and judgment. Their activity tolerance may not be there because the heart is not doing what it's supposed to do in critical care. As soon as this person is in the ward, occupational therapy starts with assessment. The occupational baseline is always the root of what you would do. Who is this person? What does he do? What's the environment that he lives in? What's the social situation? Just know the person. That is our core. This occupational being is our core. We have to know who they are. Then the next thing would be find out where are they now? What can they do? So that would be ADL assessment. You're not expecting any motor impairment apart from low endurance, but there should not be any neurological impairment or focal neurological impairment. If anything, it would be a diffuse neurological impairment, meaning processing, that would be affected. What would be the measures that you use for these things? There are multiple measures out there. And the one thing that not a lot of people are using would be the Rivermead Cognitive Behavioral Memory Test. It's, again, setting dependent. Your service, your input as an occupational therapist will be setting dependent. So now if you're in the ward, all you need to do is make sure that the person is safe to go home. How? What are the three parameters that you need to look at? Their functional mobility, their toilet hygiene, and their emergency response, meaning that they're not confused, that they can call for help. And if they are confused, is there somebody who can monitor them? If they're safe with these three things and they have enough support at home, yes, we can get them home. That's your role in the hospital. Who would follow up in the community? There is a need for continued monitoring. There shouldn't be any more follow-ups because the person is medically stable. But there is a functional problem. There might be some functional problems. Then who would be responsible for this? Whose area is this? Community therapy team. Now, community therapy team can be divided in two. It can be the acute community therapy team, maybe the reablement team. And you just need to do the basics. And again, the assessment will fall on what is wrong and how can we overcome these things that are wrong. First, you'd want to check, are you safe with meal preparation? So that's something that you can do as soon as you're there. Are you safe mobilizing in the house? Are you building routines and habits? If all of these things are good and there are long-standing problems, vocational rehabilitation would need to come in. Who's going to deal with this? Occupational therapists can deal with this, but it depends on the service and which service is being provided. So if I'm an occupational therapist, following this person all the way throughout, that would be something that I would do. Once they're in critical care, I would stimulate, I would maximize the opportunity, get a good picture of where they're at, do restorative interventions. In the wards, then do the essential ADLs to get them home. And then once they're at home, I will do the safety at home, look at the environment. I won't rely straight away on adaptive aids unless all the restorative input and all the remediation activities have been exhausted. And when you have, then you now revert to compensatory strategies, either changing the environment, either putting on social support, contextual support to facilitate more performance, which would have been create and support intervention and community reintegration. That's it. And that would be the chain, the sequence of rehabilitation. Not for out-of-hospital cardiac arrest on its own, but for hypoxic event. It's not the event. It's all about the symptoms. What are the symptoms? What are the functional impairment? What are the performance component impairment? And then what are the contextual limitations? And then you address these things. I hope you learned something from this conversation. If you enjoyed it, like, subscribe, share. Things that you do to appease the algorithm. Share it with your friends. Share your learning with your friends. I don't mind about these podcasts being shared, although it's helpful because it's able to reach other people. What I want is for you to share your learning. Don't just listen to it. Understand, learn, practice, grow as an occupational therapist. Talk to each other, learn together, grow together. Just remember, anything you do matters and has an outcome. Until next time, guys. Bye.